Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. We're continuing our theme of the health, protecting those who protect us. Our next guest on American Warrior Radio is a deputy chief at the Tucson Fire Department and a pretty darn good photographer to boot. Darren Wallentine, welcome to American Warrior Radio, sir.
Thank you, Ben. It's a pleasure to be on with you, and it's an honor to be on American Warrior Radio.
Oh, get out of here. I'll take it. So, Darren, I teased before the break, what is responsible or was responsible for 61% of the career line of duty deaths among firefighters between 2002 and 2017?
Well, it's now cancer. Cancer is the leading cause of our line of duty deaths in the fire service today. And we're also seeing that in some of these studies, it's showing that in compared to the general population, firefighters are at 9% greater risk of being diagnosed with a cancer, as well as a 14% greater chance of dying from cancer.
And Darren, I wanted to make that comparison because let's face it, you guys are involved in a very dangerous business. I mean, you know, like I said, I was a wildlands firefighter, but I mean, put me in 10,000 acres of flame, no problem. Ask me to run into a burning trailer or a building, forget about it. You got to be crazy. But I mean, that's what you guys do on a regular basis, not to mention, you know, working in the middle of traffic, lots of dangerous stuff. So people need to understand, and it's almost a shock value. Look, our firefighters are dying from cancer. They're not dying from getting crushed in a burning building, and that's not good.
Right. And so the thing that we've been able to recognize, and this is where we really rely on the researchers to make us look smart. We make them look good. We tell them that all the time when they partner with us. But fire service cancer has just become this beast of trying to determine what it is we're being exposed to. With everything that we fill our homes, you mentioned trailers. Mm-hmm. The fire is really a toxic soup. It's just a mixture of all of these different plastics and synthetics that when you put them under fire, they create this toxic environment that we're going into. And unfortunately, our firefighters are being exposed to this on a regular basis. It's these little doses over the course of the 25, 30-year career that is now really impacting our fire service today.
Yeah, well, Darren, that begs a question in my mind. This, how long have we known about this? Has it only been in the 2000s, or is it gotten worse? Because you're right, in the old days, I mean, a building would be, you know, wood or brick and mortar.
Right.
And nowadays, we're building with things that may be lighter and more structurally sound, but are made out of different stuff.
Absolutely, and you referenced the wildland aspect too. When you're out fighting on the on a wildland fire, you know that these are organic, you know, pieces of wood and brush that when they burn, yeah, they produce soot and they are toxic. But the things that we fill our homes with, the plastics, they're giving off all of these different sorts of elements that are known carcinogens. And so it is an element of exposure that we have been since the middle 2010, 2015, begin to really take a look at in research. There's a couple prominent research studies. One is called the Lamaster study, and then there's a Doug Daniels study where they went back years with multiple departments, and they actually were able to see cancer rates in firefighters were increased in some of these very prominent cancers that are taking the lives of our firefighters.
And I want to emphasize, Darren, it's not just when one looks at the list of the types of cancer, you would naturally assume lung cancer, but testicular cancer. It's going all through their bodies.
Absolutely. I mean, it is. You would think that the initial, you know, thought would be lung cancer, which it does. It's a very high one. But mesothelioma is the other. Skin cancer is another, and these are presumptive cancers that, at least, you know, on the surface, appears like our folks are being covered when it comes to workers' comp claims. But there's cancers that are unique for women, you know, in the fire service as well, And so this is a huge part of what we do in safety now is the research, and that's what's being highlighted this month in the Firefighter Cancer Awareness Month, sanctioned by the International Association of Firefighters and the Firefighter Cancer Support Network.
Darren, in prepping for this show, because, you know, Ben gets dumb questions regularly every show, and when I was doing wildland firefighting, pretty much our personal protective equipment when it came to respirators was a neckerchief, you know, dipped in water.
Mm-hmm.
The PPE that our urban firefighters use is obviously much more sophisticated, but that's not... Mm-hmm. That it's not just what they're breathing, right? I mean, there's a whole list of ways they can get exposed. Walk our listeners through what those are.
Sure. There's three routes of exposure for our firefighters. The top one and the most significant one is the inhalation exposure. Yes, we do wear our air pack when we go interior, but oftentimes when our firefighters have knocked the fire down, in an attempt to either conserve the air that's in their air pack, they may disconnect, but there's still elements that are within the structure or in proximity to the structure that they're still breathing in, and you may not see it. You're going to smell it, you know, especially days after the fire. The other one, too, is the dermal exposure. When firefighters begin to take their gear off after a fire, they're getting it on their skin, and that's the second route. The third one is ingestion. So it's possible that you could end up getting it through your mucous membranes. You might have something to drink. You might have something to eat after the fire. And if you're not practicing good hygiene, these are all different routes for exposure. So we've been attempting to put into place these prevention efforts that will minimize these routes of cancer getting into our firefighters.
This whole thing to me, Darren, is completely tragic on multiple levels. I mean, the people who literally risk their lives to save us on a daily basis, mm-hmm. then are withering on the vines. Not a powerful enough statement for this, but it completely breaks my heart. And do you think there was any, I'm not going to say added fuel to the fire because that would be a terrible pun, but after 9/11. Mm-hmm. So many of those first responders started to suffer from different types of cancer, and someone's like, hey, we're going to connect the dots. Has that helped with the efforts to try and address this and get some help for these firefighters, do you think?
Well, yes, absolutely. I mean, you can't turn on social media or see the news without seeing firefighters from 9/11, from the post 9/11 impacts of cancer on our firefighters that worked at Ground Zero, but it is this battle that we're facing each and every day to try and protect our firefighters and give them the tools, because it could be the one big one like at Ground Zero, or it could be the little doses over the course of that 30-year career where you're being exposed. And we've been able to see through research that it actually changes your genetic makeup that either prevents cancer or promotes it. So yes, it is a battle that we're trying to take, straight on with this month of providing information and resources that our firefighters will review and make sure that they adhere to the safe practices that can hopefully limit the chances of them being diagnosed with cancer in their career or in their retirement.
Darren, we have a lot of firefighting families that, listen. So when we come back, I want to talk about some of those prevention efforts, both on the practical basis and then also what the rest of us can do to help these firefighters. Can you just, before the break, though, sort of sum up National Firefighter Cancer Awareness Month? Is this targeted at the firefighters and their families? Is it targeted at everybody? Do we need to get some of our elected officials to step up a little bit more and start working on legislation to get some help? All of the above?
I would say all of the above. So it's not only the awareness, to the public about the risks of being a firefighter, but also for our firefighters to review the literature and make sure that they can protect themselves. And absolutely, it is making sure that the electeds are aware of the challenges that are being faced. I look at firefighting as a blessing and a curse. It's the greatest job in the world, but on the flip side of that coin, it could be a curse when you're sitting in a doctor's office, getting that diagnosis that you weren't expecting.
Amen, brother. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia. We're speaking with Deputy Chief Darren Wallentine about National Firefighters Cancer Awareness Month. Stick around. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia. We're talking to Darren Wallentine about National Firefighter Cancer Awareness Month. Darren just so happens to be a deputy chief at the Tucson Fire Department. But I tell you, if you think about it, ladies and gentlemen, every community around our country, no matter where you're hearing this broadcast, if it's in one of our other markets or listening to the podcast, every community has these men and women who are willing to risk their lives for us, and they're just being decimated by cancer. And let's talk about what we can do about this. Darren, before I do that, where can folks go to learn more? Is there a National Firefighter Cancer Awareness Month website or something?
So, yes. Actually, you could go on and to the International Association of Firefighters website or to the Fire Cancer Support Network. Just do a Google search for both of them, and they should have information there that would be relevant to the conversation.
Darren, last year sometime we had the executive director of just a wonderful nonprofit on that is using robotic exoskeletons to help veterans recover from spinal injuries. And the success rate is amazing. It's over 80%. I'm putting on my little BBG nerd hat, and I'm thinking if there's some obvious gaps, if our firefighters are still getting inhaling some of these toxins even while wearing their equipment, is there an initiative somewhere to make some equipment improvements, better breathing apparatus or something, so at least we can seal off that point of entry? Or is that, like a lot of things, does it come down to cost?
Well, it's actually the technology is there, where our firefighters are wearing the very best that the manufacturers can provide. The air packs that we wear are state of the art. They even have, in some cases, heads up displays that helps us, monitor our air. But ultimately, there are some very simple practices, some action items that we're trying to teach our firefighters to perform, so that they can limit the chances of what we would call cross-contamination. And the big one with that is a post-fire emergency washdown or a decontamination of their equipment. That is before they take and unplug their air pack and start breathing in.
Okay, I'm having trouble wrapping my head around this. So I'm in my engine company. We respond to the fire. Mm-hmm. We got, two to five men and women in the cab. We jump out. Mm-hmm. We fight the fire. And the shower's burned up. We can't use the shower at the home we just put out. How are they doing this deconnect? Is there a little truck that follows them around with a tent? No.
It's quite elaborate. It's a 5-gallon bucket with a garden hose and some Dawn dish soap that you add to the water.
Stop. Seriously. You're joking.
Seriously. So Dr. Kenny Fint from NIOSH, he was able to conduct research. And by using this soap with water and then spray off our firefighters before they unplug their regulator to their air pack, before they start breathing in whatever is off-gassing on their turnout gear, because when they go into this environment, the soot, it's sticky and it off-gasses. So what they were able to prove is that you can remove up to 85% of what we call polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, PAHs for short, and you can minimize that by up to 80 to 85%. So that is going to limit your exposure by just scrubbing down after the fire. And at that point, it is then safer for you to begin to take your gear off. And it's also going to minimize your dermal exposure when you start to take all of your firefighting gear off.
I got to tell you, that warms my heart. It doesn't necessarily have to be Dawn, though, right? I mean, they're not an advertiser. So any grease.
Well, I just think that Dawn, Dawn dish soap, I think they had that in large quantities at the CDC and NIOSH after some of these oil spills. So
fair enough. So decontaminate at the fire scene itself. What about, you talked about the gear. I mean, we're wearing lots of stuff. The turnout gear is very heavy. Does that stuff get cleaned regularly? Does it get replaced regularly? Is it, it's not disposable. It's too expensive for that. But what about the gear itself?
So the gear, once it gets washed down, we then have our firefighters come back to the fire station. And we have, they're called extractors. That's a fancy word for a fire station washing machine, where we can then launder our gear and then get it ready to go for the next run. And in some cases, like for us in Tucson, we've been very fortunate to have the ability to purchase a second set of gear for our firefighters so that they can remain ready for that next call should there be a call while they're laundering their gear.
What about just something basic like, most firehouses, most firehouses have showers and locker rooms. Mm-hmm. I assume after every fire, folks are taking a cleaning up a little bit?
Absolutely. And in fact, it even starts before that. We have on scene when we have our firefighters come out of the hot zone or from outside of the interior of the fire attack, we'll have them go through a rehab process where they can get something to drink, get their vital signs taken, but we also have wet wipes where they can wipe down their skin, especially the most vulnerable parts around their neck and their arms, so that they can remove some of that right away. But then once they do arrive back at the fire station and start to put everything back together after that fire, we do have them go take a shower. We call it shower within an hour, so that they can remove the possible contaminants that were still left after we've done our decon.
Darren, as you know, we have listeners all across the country, and I'm thinking, larger fire departments like yours or in some of our other traditional broadcast markets, probably have the funds to do this. But, what about the little, volunteer fire department and wide spot in the road, Texas? Are they, are all these departments treated equally, or do we have some gaps out there in some of these volunteer fire departments who are nonetheless doing the same job?
Well, I would suggest that there are gaps and that we're doing the very best that we can to get the information out. As far as, if, for example, having a second set of turnouts, that's not, financially possible with some of our smaller departments. But they could have a couple sets of spares, that they could possibly afford, that the folks who were the most contaminated that needed their gear to be cleaned right away could end up moving into that. But definitely there's gaps.
I'm all about solutions, Darren. Is that one of the areas where maybe our listeners can help? I know the Gary Sinise Foundation provides support for first responders in addition to veterans. And it seems to me I've seen photos of them supporting a fire department somewhere. Is there some place where our listeners, can I just buy a set of turnout gear and walk down to the local firehouse to say, here you go, one size doesn't fit all, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So here's the ask, so to speak, from our listeners. There are times when, whether it's our union or whether it's our fire administration, the departments themselves, who are needing the public safety funding. And so when we start talking about, public safety and the funding for our firefighters, it's one of those, we want to make sure that we can prevent the exposures, by putting them in the best gear possible. So it's usually at the ballot box when we're asking for whatever it might be. I know in Tucson that we had that. It's called Tucson Delivers, where parts of the budget were directed to public safety, And for the firefighters, that included getting them in a second set of turnouts.
Darren, we're down to about a minute and a half, and there's something along those lines. Tell us real quick, what is presumptive cancer legislation?
So presumptive cancer legislation is the process where each state has their own legislation that it pertains to what we would determine to be a presumptive cancer. So there's different states have different regulations or laws pertaining to it. So for the state of Arizona, there are certain cancers that are determined to be you've contracted it as a result of your career as a firefighter. And so it would seem that it would be an easy process for somebody's workers' comp claim that when you're diagnosed with lung cancer, that you would be having, you're entitled to those benefits for a workers' comp claim. But it's not that easy. So we have to prove that there's exposure. We have to prove that there's, they've had so many calls that they've been, you know, in this environment, and it's just not a very easy process to navigate.
Darren, thank you. I apologize. We're out of time. And ladies and gentlemen, certainly if you're a firefighter, get an annual cancer screening, please. Darren Wallentine, Deputy Chief Tucson
absolutely.
Fire, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Ben. I appreciate it.
Ladies and gentlemen, you can find this podcast and over 300 others, AmericanWarriorRadio.com. Find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. If you're going somewhere, want something to listen to, you can find us on Spotify, Pandora, Apple, iTunes. You can download us from almost any system that you use. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening today, and please go out and take action on what you've heard. Until next time, all policies and procedures are to remain in place. Take care.
You've been listening to American Warrior Radio. You can hear over 150 episodes of this program at AmericanWarriorRadio.com.